The 742 Coffee Cast is your ultimate destination for insightful conversations, thought-provoking ideas, and innovative strategies in St. Cloud Area School District. Your host is Director of Community Engagement and Communications, Tammy DeLand. Grab a cup of coffee and join us. Hello, this is 742 Coffee Cast. And I'm your host, Tammy DeLand, Director of Community Engagement and Communications for St. Cloud Area Schools. Today is our first ever episode, and our guest is science teacher extraordinaire from St. Cloud Apollo High School, Devin Boker. Welcome, Devin.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, thanks for being here. Today on CoffeeCast, we are going to talk about what a modern classroom is, how it looks different from something I might have gone to. What's up with artificial intelligence and even Keurig coffee makers? But first, I'm just wondering, could you tell us a little bit about yourself, how long you've been in district, what your interests are, and so forth?
So I have been now at Apollo. This is my second year here, and I'm teaching wildlife biology and biology. Before coming to Apollo, I was at Roosevelt for 3 years, now Katherine Johnson. So the high school program, as a lot of people listening are probably aware, moved and shifted around. So I was at the high school program when it was stationed at Roosevelt. So this is, my fifth year, which I feel really excited about and really proud of, and have no intent of that changing and just going up. So I'm very, very grateful. My background is in wildlife biology. And so I did that for a while, worked in some wolf conservation and some other things, went back to school for science education, and then started. I just finished my master's in biology. So
exciting.
Accomplishment. Took a while. Yeah.
And what are your other interests?
I do a lot of things. I really, really like doing things outdoors, hiking, birding, just watching bugs and stuff like that. Lots of stuff with the family, outdoors in particular. I podcast.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that. It's called The Wildlife, right?
Yes. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to learn more about that later. But also, didn't you just do an acting stint?
Oh, yeah. See, well, kind of. With that, I did start. And then because things picking up with school and everything like that, I said, you know what? I should refocus and try not to have too many outside distractions, especially while working on these new standards and things like that. So I ended up leaving it a little bit in, but yeah.
So, and that was with Great Theater. Mm-hmm. So multi-talented individual. Well, today we are going to talk about something called a modern classroom, which is, I'm going to let you explain all about it, but my first question is, after you tell us what it means, how is it different? What does it look and sound like that would be different than a biology classroom that you or even, I had gone to all those years ago?
Yeah, I think the main three components of the modern classroom approach to doing things is number one, teacher created videos, which is something that a lot of people are nervous about up front. But let me tell you, as someone who does it, once you get started, it's not so bad. There's plenty of tools out there. Our Macs are really, really great at recording the screen and things. If people are camera shy and worried about making mistakes and stuff, the students, they eat it up. They eat it up when you make mistakes or you say something silly or there's a dog barking in the background or something like that.
You do outtakes.
Yeah. And, so I intentionally try to be kind of funny with them anyways, just to help keep their attention. But that's one of the big things is having videos. So you record your lectures ahead of time. And one of the things that I do, I'll still do direct instruction. I'll still do lecture if need be, but the video is always there. So if someone is absent, someone misunderstood something, didn't quite catch something, there's always the opportunity to get that information again. Game changer. The second big component would be self-pacing, which is definitely an adjustment. It's a different way of thinking about things because it's not a teacher-directed classroom. It's not a teacher-led classroom in a sense. I look more of the role of the teacher as You are the coach. You are ensuring that everyone is on pace in the way that they need to be, and mostly that they are learning the material, right? You're not leaving anybody behind because everyone is working at their own pace. You still have due dates. You still have deadlines. You still have, you know, various markers and checkpoints and things. But the opportunity exists for if you need to work a little bit slower, by all means, please do. It helps you to learn, right? You're not leaving anybody behind. If you're working a little bit faster, perfect. You're doing well. We love that. So providing more challenges or you know, upscaling some of the things that they might be doing to kind of supplement with that self-pacing. The third thing is mastery-based learning, which for me this year has been the biggest game changer out of all my years teaching so far, because it kind of goes hand in hand with that self-pacing, the idea that they are genuinely learning, they are truly, you know, working with and mastering the standards, but that no one's getting left behind, right? The idea is it's standards-based. They've mastered the standard. If they have, great, we can move on. If they haven't, there's opportunities to scaffold, one-on-one, you know, group work, whatever it might be to get them to that point. And so how that might look a little bit different, in my room, mastery, we consider 80%. So if you've gotten 80%, which is, you know, that's fair, that's a B. If you've gotten 80% on the assessment, that's considered mastery, and you can move on with the group, with the whole. If you've not gotten 80%, you have opportunities to reattempt. And that looks different kind of depending on what the assessment is. It's never just a straight retake. So we always have some kind of checklist or a plan of, okay, so you're going to meet with me in Eagle Time and we're going to take care of these couple of things. And then you have another shot. And we do that until they've mastered.
So let me stop you there for a second, because you started by describing video. Mm-hmm. And I want to be clear, this is an online instruction.
No.
You're talking about being in a science classroom and utilizing all of these methods. How is this different from blended learning, or is it blended learning?
It's a form of blended learning. Yeah, you could definitely say that. So, you know, some people and some, it depends on the content area and things. I feel like math does this frequently and for various reasons. So some will just rely on, so any lecture is just video and there is no direct lecturing. There's no direct instruction. I don't like to do that because I like that interaction piece and the ability to kind of gauge the understanding of the people in the room and that kind of in the moment feedback that you get and that, you know, that on your toes kind of, okay, well, let me explain it this way. You don't necessarily get that with the video if you only do the video. So no, it's not online school by any means. It's just it's a clone of you, right? You have yourself available immediately. You can be paused. You can be slowed down. You can have captions, which is also really, really great when you have EL students. Captions on the video, you can literally slow down the pace of the video and I will talk in slow motion. And, you know, all of that is a really, really great tool that you don't have if it's just me in front of the room talking and then we never come back to it.
Sure. Another question I have is about self-pacing. I was an educator for myself almost 20 years. And I remember the challenge of having this diverse set of skills and knowledge and prior experience in one classroom. So when you talk about self-pacing, if I were to walk in your classroom on whatever given day, I crash your classroom, how does that look if I have someone working ahead of that mastery level and I've got someone who really needs to catch up? I mean, what does that look like? How do you manage that as an instructor? I know it's challenging.
It's a challenge. It's a different kind of challenge. And here's what I'll say. I was worried that I would not have the time to do those kinds of things, you know, between making recorded videos and preparing various materials and scaffolds of materials. But by doing those things, I'm actually more free during class. And so I'm more readily available to the students. And so
on an individual basis.
Yep. And so what it might look like, it kind of depends on the learning segment or if we're working on a particular project. But I'll give you an example of today. I have an auto updating progress tracker in Google Sheets. And so basically it's got the assignments and the dates, whatever is a required assignment or an optional assignment or an assessment. And I basically mark, yep, they have completed it, or no, they haven't, or they need revisions on it. What it does for me is it puts together a very nice pie chart that says these students are ahead of pace, these students are on pace, or these students are a little bit behind pace. What assignments they need to be working on, what they need to revise, etc. It also has a very nice feature which will group the students based on similar progress. And sometimes I don't do it based on similar progress. Sometimes I do it based on who I think might be like a good like peer mentor or something, but usually student progress. So like what I will do is in our agenda at the start of class, here's our list of things that we're doing and here's what you're doing if you're on pace. If you're behind pace, you know that it's not the on pace thing. The next slide that I then put up afterwards shows three groups based on similar progress, and they know based on the color coding and things, oh, yep, I'm ahead or I'm on. I also have a checklist that they use that tells them like, you know, where they are on things. So like today I had one group that was working with me. So I was able to have small group instruction with those who were a little bit behind and for various reasons, absences, lack of understanding, you know, whatever it might be. There's a group who's working together on things. And then I had two or three who were like ahead, and I had them doing more of a challenging assignment. So rather than letting them get too far ahead and then just, oh now we're done, I just upstep what they're working on. And you'd be surprised. They don't really say, oh, this is just extra work. No, they like it because it's a challenge and they stick with it. And one of them asked me if they could do it at home. And I'm like, that's interesting.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tell me about how the students are responding.
Yeah, it's a range. You know, I think overwhelmingly, it's a good response because the flexibility is there. They don't feel pressure of like, oh gosh, I have to get these things done right now. Or, oh, I missed these things. And when am I supposed to do them? Am I supposed to do them as homework? Do I do it over the weekend? Or now I'm so behind, there's no point in me trying anymore. Because that's, you know, that kind of apathy that happens when you start to fall behind. That's also a really big problem in high school. I don't really feel that as much when I'm using this approach because people know where they're at. They know what they need to do. They know when the dates are. They're working at their own pace. They know that the goal is true understanding. They know that the goal is I need to get these things done before the mastery check, which is what I call the test and assessments. And so there's no pressure there. One of the things that I have is this checklist that it's basically you have to get these things done. These daily work assignments are a prerequisite to the assessment. So we don't have like, oh, well, I don't need to do this because it's not going to affect my grade. You know, instead it's, oh, I have to do these things before I can take the assessment. And they know that, you know, maybe this is the day that I'm planning for everyone to take the assessment. I'm not going to like make them take it if they're not prepared. They know that they have that opportunity to get things done, to get the learning done, to work with me, to work with the group before attempting something like that.
So do you see and maybe this isn't a fair question and you can call that out, but do you see a rise in confidence then? I'm listening to you describe and that's what it seems to me an outcome would be is confidence.
I see confidence and agency. You know, there's a ownership and an awareness, right? I think sometimes people think, you know, whether it's high school or not, they kind of immediately assume the negative or the worst about intent or behavior. You know, it's like, oh, they're not doing this because, you know, endless list.
Fill in the blank. Right.
And when I, in my bell ringers and stuff, when we do check-ins and things like that. And usually what I see is a complete awareness. You know, they're not like, oh, it's your fault, you know, that I'm behind this. It's, oh, I've been procrastinating and I need to do this. Or, oh, this is going on. And there is a full awareness. And when this is available to them, that gives them some control over their own experience and their education and their pace. The pressure is lifted a little bit. Absolutely.
Amazing. How about parents? Have you had the time yet, like at parent conferences, for example, have you had discussions with parents who are either like, well, this is weird, or who understand that their student is connecting in a different way?
Yeah, I haven't really had to explain a whole lot. It's felt pretty natural and stuff. When I have had conversations, it's mostly been, okay. Oh, and they can watch these at home and stuff. I'm like, yep. Oh, okay. This is just all on Schoology. And then it's, you know, just from there. The only time, because this is just one of the ways that I have found for managing everything, is like, so if I do plan, let's say Friday is the mastery check day, I will put it as like missing in the grade book until they finish the checklist stuff, just so they are aware, like, this is what it might look like if you don't catch up, you know, and kind of helps to motivate a little bit. And so sometimes, you know, a parent might be like, oh, this is, you know, zero, but they haven't taken it, or yes, it's just until they get caught up. And then once I've communicated that and stuff, they're like, oh, okay.
Sure. An awareness piece. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I know that modern classroom is not in every class in every subject in the district. Talk about how you became a modern classroom teacher.
It was back in the spring. We had a couple of different blended learning committee, like during our committee times on Wednesday. There was some blended learning committee opportunities, and modern classroom got brought up there. And then there was basically an email that went out that was like, if you're interested, let us know. And I was like, yep, immediately. I was like, please sign me up. We did it during the summer. And I can't remember exactly how long it was. I want to say it was about 4 weeks. And the thing about it that is nice is it is immersive in kind of like how you should be structuring it for your students. So it's set up in the modern classroom approach, right? There's the recorded stuff, it's self-paced lessons. And then you basically, you know, each week have an assignment and you practice some element of that. You practice making a lecture video, you practice a self-paced assignment, you practice multiple forms of a mastery check, whatever it might be. And you work with a mentor who is a fellow teacher who also went through the modern classroom thing. So it's like modern classroom teachers all the way down. You know, at some point they did the program, they earned the distinguished educator, whatever the word is I'm looking for. And then they are now working with other teachers to help transition to that.
I know that, again, former educator, we have trends, some people say fads. We see things come and go. It seems to me that modern classroom is not that. It seems to me that this is a very practicable initiative. Is that how it feels to you? Does this feel like something that you're going to be able to roll with?
Oh, yeah, especially after year one. You know, a lot of year one stuff, it's you know, it's scrapes and bruises and stuff as you go, like as you're figuring things out. But you catch your stride. And then think about it. I mean, once it's the second year, you've now built up a whole year of lecture videos and resources. Now, I'm a fan of, I pretty much do something slightly different every single year anyway, just to kind of stay fresh and on my toes and stuff. So by no means a requirement, but at least, you know, after you've started doing it, you've got the framework, you've got the resources, you've got your videos, you've got it all there. So to continue doing that becomes very easy. And then again, the beauty of that is you are so free to then be that genuine one-on-one with your students and to do small group instruction and to really focus in on the kids who traditionally might fly under the radar. It's definitely an adjustment for sure. And I think it requires adjusting how you view your role in the classroom and kind of shaking off some, you know, preconceived notions you might have about students and what they're capable of, because they're capable of a lot more. And if you have a low expectation, they'll meet the low expectation. But when you raise that, they can absolutely reach it.
That's exciting. That's really exciting. And I know that in the St. Cloud District, we have several modern classroom educators now. Mm-hmm. And the plan is to grow that. More teachers are interested, right? This isn't a mandate. This is teachers being invited mm-hmm. to become a modern classroom teacher. And that's pretty exciting too. It just feels very organic.
Yeah, yeah. And it lends very nicely too to two really big things, which is in a lot of content areas and in mine in particular, our new standards are very much the analogy that I've heard used many times is it's like riding a bike still, just backwards. The bike works backwards. So it's you're not a supply of information. You are a guide to the information.
Yes.
It's not here are the definitions. It's how do you apply this learning and understanding? How do you do something hands-on? How do you come up with excellent? It's very much centered on them doing processing and thinking and application. And
yeah, which is what makes learning meaningful, not memorization and regurgitation, but meaningful learning.
My wildlife class, I'll admit, the last couple of weeks, it was a little bit more in that kind of traditional approach, but still in the modern classroom piece. But then the moment we started doing this current zoo project that we're working on, no one's really off task. Everyone's like very invested in what they're doing because, again, they have that agency. And it's just so powerful to see.
So exciting. It really, truly is. Well, I know that you are also distinguished in exploring and creating possibilities with artificial intelligence, which this dates me. Sounds like Twilight Zone for some of us, but for younger people, it's just maybe sounds really, really out there. So I'm wondering if we could transition to talking about, I've seen some of the things you do with AI and it's just astonishing. But again, if you would start by defining what is AI, what's artificial intelligence, and how you are able to use that creatively, not just as an engagement tool, but as learning in the classroom.
I think number one, I feel like there's a misconception about what AI really is and how it's functioning and what it's doing. We're not talking Terminator. Right. It's not doomsday type stuff. It's generative information. And you can kind of think about it like flowcharts, right? You give it a prompt and it goes one direction. You give it another prompt and then it knows, this direction and so on and so on. So that's kind of really what it is. It's just functioning off of a very, 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 very big database, way larger than any of us can fathom.
Sure. And
so it can do things very quickly. There's a lot of fear about it. And I know that balancing out that fuel and friction, is really important because, with anything new, there's definitely a lot of friction. And I'm one of those who's just like, go, 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 go. Something's new. Okay, awesome. Let's try it. So as far as like using it in the classroom, the possibilities, they're endless. I will say the first thing that I did was I wanted to teach a lesson about respecting AI, the potential downsides of AI, why you shouldn't just use it as a system for information and cheating, and just copying things. There's this classic lesson that people do either usually in science or language arts about, digital citizenship or digital literacy. It's the Pacific Northwest tree octopus. And so it's like this fake animal and all this fake information. And the general gist is you just did all this research about this fake animal and you missed all the clues. But I've used that in the past. And I thought, why don't I use AI to just update this a little bit? So I came up with an animal. It's the Venezuelan marine chameleon. I put together a whole website, a whole fact thing about it. I used AI to generate all of the images. And then I started embedding all of these, all the text, by the way, all AI. 100%. I started embedding little clues. So like hyperlinks, if you were doing horizontal research, you might open the hyperlink to see, okay, where does this take me? Is this a reliable source? Well, some of the hyperlinks I included were to things like a published Google Doc that said, this is not a real animal. This is AI generated. And do you think any of the students caught it when they were researching the animal? Not a one. Not a one. So that led really nicely into conversations about focused note taking and horizontal research and the importance of credible sources. And also, we live in a different world now. And the information you take in, you've got to know if it's real. You got to know if you can trust it. And AI, I mean, look at what it was able to do. And I was able to do it in like 10 minutes.
Amazing.
And yeah, as far as use, it's the ultimate time saver from a teacher perspective, because there's all kinds of sources out there and there's different websites and things like Magic School AI or even just good old fashioned ChatGPT. If you know what kind of prompt, then you can create anything. Lesson plans, unit plans, you can do things, you know, specifically related to standards. Endless possibilities. As long as you know what to put in, you can generate tons and tons of stuff. It still requires you to be the expert. It still requires you to be able to check it and make sure it's accurate and to be able to tweak it because it's not always perfect. And that's also a good lesson. I'm very open about that with students that I use it in that way frequently because you still have to know what to put in, right? You still have to have good prompts. If you want a good result, you have to be really, you know, strategic with what you're putting into it. So it's not just give me the answer.
I wonder about, I'm going back to, I just, and that is, I saw that lesson. You must have posted it somewhere.
I think so. Yeah.
I saw that lesson. It was incredible. But I'm wondering about, so if I'm a student and I think, oh, this is the answer, right? This is the answer to that paper that I have due, or this is the, and if it's not that, talk to me a little bit about what the benefits are for a student exploring AI.
That's obviously the big concern from the teacher perspective in regards to students is, are they going to be using it to cheat? There's so many layers to that, right? Number one, let's just say students have found ways to cheat if they are going to cheat for as long as it has been possible, right? If that is the goal, you know, they will find a way, whether it's AI or a phone or whatever it might be. Yes, AI makes it easier, but there are also lots of tools out there to catch those kinds of things. My favorite is an extension that you can download in Google. It's called DraftBack. So if you assign a Google Doc assignment, a Google assignment in Schoology, it basically records like a time-lapse history of the Google Doc. So you watch it be typed live, all the editing, everything. If suddenly the whole thing just appears, it's very clear that they just pasted it into the document, right? So then you can have those conversations and stuff. I prefer to have a different, more productive conversation about AI with students, which is how can this be useful for you and not something that you rely on as a crutch. The biggest thing, so Bloom's taxonomy, like sure. that guy. He had the two sigma problem, which is basically the idea that the average student, if tutored one-to-one using mastery learning, performed two standard deviations better than students that were educated in a classroom environment with a whole group. Well, that's kind of an issue, right? If we're saying that one-on-one, they perform extraordinarily better, but I'm only one and there are 30 of them, how do you do that? AI, that's an opportunity to solve the two sigma problem. AI is a wonderful personal tutor. And so I teach them about the prompts that they can use, like, you know, act as an uplifting tutor for a high school student of this age. This is the current subject. These are the things that I'm having trouble understanding. This is the vocab I do under, you know, very detailed prompts. And then they come back the next day and they're like, I get it. I got it. I got it now. It worked. And that's it in the conversation. Like suddenly like that block that they had solved overnight from a conversation with ChatGPT, you know, something like that. So the power that it has to solve things like the two sigma problem, to help them be quicker in application. I mean, we're even working on this zoo project right now where they have to design exhibits or enrichment tools for bison or prairie dogs in my wildlife class. And I've sat with them and I've showed them how we can use artificial intelligence to help come up with ideas and perfect the ideas that we have. And so we're using it not as a cheat or an answer. We're using it to boost the work that we're already doing and just hone it a little bit better, you know, bring it to the next level. Maybe even present us with new questions or challenges so we can deepen our learning even more rather than it just being surface level. Oh, got my answer, move on.
Well, shifting again, I also know that one of your particular talents is making video go viral because I have seen the Keurig video that literally went viral, almost 1 million likes. Right?
Yeah.
Was it TikTok or?
It was on, yeah, it was on.
Real. TikTok. It was TikTok. Okay. But yeah, almost 1 million likes. Yeah. And so I have two questions about that. One of them is obvious. Can you make the Keurig sound for us today on the podcast?
I probably could. I don't know if it'd pick up in the mic right, but I could at least do the first part.
Talk to you, before you go. Talk to me about how this happened. A viral video.
Well, I mean, the whole thing to make it a short story. I only got on there during COVID to start making videos and use the editing tools and stuff. Cause I knew that my students were on there if they weren't on online class, you know? So I was like, well, maybe if I can make things in there and then like I put it in our slides. And so they see that familiar 9x16 format and that it's on TikTok, like maybe it'll keep their attention a little bit more. And then I just started doing more like science educational videos. And then every once in a while I do some random funny thing. And I do impressions all the time. And one, I have a Keurig in my room. And so frequently, like if I forget to turn it on, for example, I'll just make the sound. I don't know. I'll just like kind of make the Keurig sound and be like, oh, is it done? Oh no, there's nothing in it. What happened? Oh, and I just play it off silly. And this particular time I was just making a cup of coffee and I was kind of doing the sound and I was like, oh, you know what? I should put that on there. I've never done that before. Sat in the car really quick, recorded it, and then put my phone down, and then a little bit later I had like thousands of notifications. I'm like, what?
What is
I do science things and educational stuff. Why is this the thing that, you know, that got the attention? But
maybe you need to demonstrate why it was the thing.
Yeah, it was, I can, okay.
Sorry, I'm putting you on the spot.
Okay.
Amazing. Oh my God.
I think
God.
It was longer in the video, but that's the gist.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. And so what did that, I've never had a viral video. What did that feel like? That many people.
It was really weird. It's not quite the first time. There was one other time a few years back and I was complaining about the anatomically incorrect skeletons in the Halloween section, and then it ended up with an NPR interview and stuff, and that was a little
I haven't seen that one. Yeah. I'm gonna have to look that one.
And so it was really weird because, you know, I've had things get semi big before, but that just the notifications just kept coming, and then I'm like looking at my email and suddenly there's an email from the Today Show and they're like, hey, can we call you quick, we'd like to talk to you about it. I'm like, what about what? Making the call, what? Like
about my curriculum? No, Keurig.
And then like, well, you know, can you do an espresso? And I'm like, yes, I can actually. And like, can you do it on the phone? I'm like, okay. But why is it this? And you know, it was a very, very bizarre. And of course,
the students had to have loved it.
So, you know, every once in a while I'm in the hallway and a student that I don't have in class is like, like right by me. And I'm like, okay. Yeah.
Well, I hate to sound like I'm creepy, but I also happen to know that you have something potentially really exciting coming up. And it's like with a really famous TV nighttime show.
Yeah, I got one update and the update is basically a non-update. It basically was like, see, the initial proposal was for like one day and then they moved it a week earlier. And then they're like, right now we actually can't make it work for this, but we still want to do it at some point. So we're just going to, we'll let you know. And I'm like, oh, okay. So I guess what happened is Jimmy Fallon, host of The Tonight Show, comedian from SNL,
kind of
watching him on TV, you know, saw one of my videos and he asked his people to email me because he said, I want him to come and do this on the Tonight Show. And so I was invited to do that. Now it's not working at the moment, so fingers crossed. I don't know. Either way, honestly, I just appreciate the knowledge that I made Jimmy Fallon laugh with something ridiculous. I can live with that. I'm content. My heart is happy.
And what was the video?
More impressions. So I do a lot of, I think I just do a lot of noises. I do a lot of noises and accents. I do a lot of noises around the classroom and stuff. And when I'm talking about animals, I usually do the noise of the animal. And so I had done a video where it was like 19 animal sounds in 60 seconds, because that was the time limit of the video. And it was like 2 years ago. And I guess he saw it and was like, call this guy.
That is terrific. Well, now we're all going to have to watch Tonight Show and tell you
it's
up here.
It's ridiculous. Life is ridiculous and it doesn't make any sense.
In a really great way.
Yeah.
Right. And I know you have your own podcast, The Wildlife. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about that a little bit, how that came to be and what you do on your own show. Mm-hmm. And also where can we listen to it?
Yeah. Yeah, I'll start with the typical line. It's available wherever you get your podcast.
That was done very well.
It's the craziest thing. I'm about almost 200 episodes in at this point. When the school year is going, it's kind of hard to churn out the episodes. So, and I take my time with them. And so, you know, every few weeks or so ish, you know, but I've got about 9 coming up, 3 interviews coming up with some pretty interesting people. It's just it's a science and nature show. And so some episodes are about specific animals. Some are more focused on a scientist's work, you know, their conservation work, you know, different experiences that they've had. A lot of the episodes, they feature a guest. So I reach out to a diverse range of scientists and conservationists and science communicators around the world. And we sit down and have a personal conversation and talk about their interests and how they got where they are and advice that they have and their work and their hopes for the future and tips for people who want to make a difference and that kind of stuff. And it started as a complete accident, which is the funny part, because it was right after I graduated from my wildlife biology program. It was before I started as a naturalist and before doing wolf conservation. I was kind of like in this middle ground, and I knew that I wanted to apply all that education that I had just gotten in some way. And I was really fond of like naturalist type work and communicating that. And I was like, oh, so I'll start a blog. So I had a blog and thought, you know, what would be really cool is if I start just doing video interviews with different scientists, and I'll make a YouTube series out of it. So I scheduled the first one with Dr. Tim Caro at UC Davis to talk about the mystery behind zebra stripes. Like, why do they have them? And that day, right about to do the interview, Skype stops working. And I didn't have Zoom or anything like that at the time. This is a while ago. And I'm like, okay, well, what am I going to do? I finally get an alternative. The webcam stops working, and so does the mic on my computer. And I'm like, well, this is horrible. And I'm like, this is my first one. I don't want to like cancel or reschedule, because like, what if he says no? And then what if he like tells other people that like, oh, I reached out and then we canceled last minute. So, you know, very silly. But I ended up finding Google Voice, because it's a free phone number and you can record the phone call. And so we just had a phone conversation instead. And that, now I'm sitting here with this audio going, I don't know what to do with this. So in iMovie on my phone, immediately after, I threw up an image, which was just the logo at the time, and then edited the audio into like 15, 16 minutes with some sound effects and some cheesy music and some me cutting in, almost like a Radiolab style thing. And I put it up for some friends to listen to and to say like, hey, you know, what do you think? And they're like, you made a podcast. And I was like, oh, you're right, I did. I listened to podcasts and I didn't even realize what I was doing. And they're like, yeah, why don't you just do this? Because you're pretty good with the audio piece. And it might be a little less work than videos. And I'm like, yeah, you know what? I think you're right.
And as they say, the rest is history, yeah. Right? You said 200 episodes.
Yeah, it's just been going, and I've shifted with different, you know, hosts and different styles and things. I feel like I finally kind of have my stride with it, like the right sound and stuff. But yeah, it's been since 2017 and it's only grown. So that's cool. Yeah.
Wonderful. Well, I want to thank you for volunteering to be our very first guest on 742 Coffee Guest. Apollo is very fortunate to have you. And this has been really fun. Thank you, Devin. Oh, and we have a thank you gift. Oh. A Coffee Cast cup for you to take.
Oh, I like that one. Yeah. No, I appreciate it so much. Just the opportunity. I appreciate the kindness. This has been fun.
It has. Thanks again.
Yeah, thank you.
I want to again thank Devin Boker for being a guest on our show today. And in an exciting postscript, we just received word that Devin is a candidate for Minnesota Teacher of the Year. So we extend our heartfelt congratulations. It is so well deserved. Do you have a great podcast idea? Submit your idea to communications at isd742.org. And thank you for listening to 742 Coffee Cast, the best place to stay informed and be inspired by St. Cloud Area School District.